Game on, weeknights from 6
on 2FM.
Thanks to the two Johnnies. It's Wednesday, 3rd of May, and this is Game On. Fresh from helping guide Louth to the Leinster decider with Dublin, Sam Mulroy will join us to talk fitness, football, and finals. Sal Allardyce will take the helm at Leeds, and he's bringing Robbie Keane with him. Plus, Messi is on the move. Paul Curry joins us to talk football. Nadine Doherty and Ethan Murray will join us to chat about this week's Smoky and Ladies football action. If you want to get in touch, please text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM.
Game On on 2FM.
Now, welcome along. I'm not even sure where to start, Paul Curry, because there's so much football news, but I guess it'd have to be Sam Allardyce and his new job with Leeds. He's been out talking to the media and he reckons that there's nobody with more football experience and know-how than him. Would you agree?
Of managers that are available, he might have a bit of a point, but there's definitely other managers who would have liked to have taken that Leeds job, but he's done it before, Marine. He's gotten teams safe in this sort of situation. I just worried that there's maybe not enough games for him to really get his stamp on the team. And if you look at their fixtures as well, they're not that favourable. But it's going to be. Do you know what? In a way, it's great to have Big Sam back because he's such a big personality.
And Roy Hodgson,
yeah. It's almost like the old guard coming back in. But it'll certainly be an eventful journey for Sam Allardyce. Robbie Keane obviously gone in alongside him, and Carl Robinson, who was with him at Blackburn Rovers, ex MK Dons and Oxford manager. He's a very good coach, and I'm sure they'll go back to basics. I was joking with Nadine, I'd say they were practicing set pieces there today. I say it was old school stuff that he was doing, but you know what you get with him. It's simple, it's don't complicate the game and be difficult to beat. And if you look at Leeds' results in the last couple of weeks, they've been anything but that, so you would imagine he'll be able to get a bit of an improvement in that squad.
Okay, let's hear from him. He was out speaking to the media today.
Obviously I've had a lot of response from many people who I know have sent in their congratulations, and a few have said I must be mad, but I enjoyed the game so much, and to try and be able to save this club and put it back and keep it in the Premier League is a big responsibility and a big challenge, but one I was prepared to take because of who Leeds United are.
With four games to go, does that give you enough time, and is this your biggest challenge?
It's probably the biggest challenge because of the shortness of games that are left. I think that there needs to be points picked up, and the difficulty is this, you know, you look at this fixtures, you know, and I mean, we start with an easy one on Saturday, and you know, I mean, can't get any easier than Manchester City away, can it? But Carl Robinson coming with me, and today obviously Robbie Keane's joined us, like you mean, so I don't know the rest of the staff, but I've got these lads who I've known for a long, long time who I trust, and hopefully the rest of the staff take the responsibility on board to produce a better performance on and off the field to help the players to do that. So we'll try and go to Manchester City and do our best to get a result.
Sam Allardyce speaking earlier on today. So Robbie Keane is joining him. I'm not sure exactly what the role is going to be, but he is part of his coaching team. He said today that he thinks that Robbie Keane will be able to rise the dressing room. He says trying to shut him up is the first thing. He's always talking, and he has experience of playing for Leeds back in the early 90s. He hasn't done a huge amount of coaching of note that we're aware of, Paul. Is this an opportunity for him now to show what he's about, or is he just going in there giving Big Sam a hand and trying to motivate the players?
I don't think Robbie will be hands-on from a training perspective. I would imagine that Carl Robinson will take the majority of that. I think Robbie, like Sam has mentioned a couple of lines there, it's all about his personality and his charisma and maybe the energy that he can bring to a dressing room, because Leeds United at this moment in time really are somewhat in a bit of free fall. They're really struggling to pick up results, and you would imagine that the confidence and just the overall feeling around the dressing room is probably quite low. So I'm sure that's his job there. He'll obviously focus on working with the likes of Patrick Bamford in the final third and scoring goals and finishing it in training. But I don't see him as being the one who's really going to take hold of training sessions or dictate the way the team are going to play or the style of play. I just don't see that with Robbie Keane. Like, it didn't really work out with him when he went to Middlesbrough with Jonathan Woodgate. He hasn't got extensive experience. It's a good opportunity for him to kind of work with Sam Allardyce. You don't know if Leeds were to stay up, would Big Sam be given that job, or he might pick up another job and bring him with him. So he knows the club, he knows the surroundings, he knows what that football club is all about. So it makes sense, I guess, in this instance, to bring him in.
So Big Sam also said today, I don't know who I'm calling him Big Sam, Sam Allardyce. Sam Allardyce today said that he is as good a manager as Pep Guardiola, Jurgen Klopp and Mikel Arteta. You have to admire the confidence there, Paul.
Yeah, I'm not sure he fully believes that statement, but yeah, he's done a good job.
I'll read you his quote. He says, "It's all there with me. They do what they do. I do what I do. In terms of knowledge and depth of knowledge, I'm up there with them. I'm not saying I'm better than them, but I'm certainly as good as they are." I think he believes he is.
Yeah, maybe. I'm just looking at the teams that he's managed previously, like over the last number of years. West Brom, they were relegated. Everton was less than a season where it didn't work out with the fans. Crystal Palace was one season, and then there was obviously the drama of what happened with England when he was given that job. So he's been out of football, and he's not been a manager, Marie, for, you know, somebody who's been ingrained in the Premier League for the last 10 years. His stints has really gone back kind of towards the early 2000s, and his stints with Blackburn and West Ham and obviously Bolton Wanderers and Newcastle. Listen, he's done a good job wherever he's gone. I think he's always been seen as a steady pair of hands, the likes of a Roy Hodgson, whereby you put him in charge, you ultimately guarantee that you're going to be in the Premier League, you're going to be able to access the money that is available in the Premier League. But I'm not sure that he's been seen as a progressive manager, and if he's putting the likes of Klopp and Pep into a sentence, I think they're of a different calibre and they're of a different mentality, and they've obviously managed much bigger clubs. But I do get what he's saying. You know, if you look from the bottom half down, if you do need a safe pair of hands, a lot of people will say that Sam Allardyce is that.
It's a pretty horrendous fixture running for him, though. So Man City, Newcastle, West Ham and Spurs, who will be thinking, you'd be thinking they might be getting themselves back on track by then.
Well, they've really hit the panic button, because if they were thinking about a change of manager, you would have thought that after the Fulham game, when they were beaten 2-1, would have been the time to do it. Give Sam Allardyce 6 games, he would have had Leicester and Bournemouth to kick off, and you would say, okay, he's got a real chance of winning those, one of those games, and just getting a bit of gap between you and the bottom three. But listen, it doesn't come any more difficult than Saturday against Man City away. There's absolutely no chance in my eyes that they can go there and get anything. And even Newcastle at home is a difficult game, with how Newcastle are going of late. So really, you're focusing on West Ham and Tottenham, I think, as the two games where you need to pick up 4 points. And I think at this moment in time, just looking at the league table, I think 4 points will do it.
Okay.
Nottingham Forest have a winnable game against Southampton, whereby they could pick up points. They could easily lose that game as well.
Have Nottingham Forest got Chelsea?
Yes, they do.
So they could win that as well.
They do, yeah. Well, they could. They also have to play Arsenal, and then they have to play Crystal Palace. So
there's three winnable games there for them.
Yeah, there is. It's a lottery. I was saying on Game On the other night, you know, all these clubs are somewhat in free fall at the moment. So there's no team that's really kind of picked up a run of form, and they look like they're going to get out of it. That was probably West Ham, and it was Wolves and Bournemouth. The other five, from Leicester down, you just don't know what you're going to get. And it might be that one good performance and a good result could be enough for one of those teams to just push them away from the bottom three. And I'm sure that's what Sam Allardyce is looking at. We'll take it game by game. At this moment in time, they sit outside the bottom three. He'll be looking at that and saying 3, 4, 5 points, and we've got a really good chance of staying up.
Okay, you mentioned clubs in free fall there. Let's move on to Chelsea now. You are a Chelsea fan. If you had a choice for the rest of the season between Frank Lampard and Sam Allardyce, who would you pick?
I don't think it matters. On the basis of that performance last night, listen, I thought Arsenal, first and foremost, were very good. I think we have to give them a bit of credit. Given the difficulty that they've had in the last couple of weeks, I thought they were at it, particularly from the first 20-30 minutes. They got at Chelsea. They were very progressive in their play. We've seen that in previous weeks, but they haven't been able to sustain it. And I just thought there was an aggressiveness, there was a creativity, there was just a clinical edge to their play that we've seen for the course of the season. And they've been so good, Marie. You know, a number of those players have really stood up. They've just been gone off the boil in the last couple of weeks. But last night was an example of them being back to their best. And for me, I know we got a chance to watch him in the Aviva earlier on in the season, but take Haaland out of the equation, I think Martin Ødegaard has been absolutely superb. Just his leadership, first and foremost, to take the ball and dictate play for that Arsenal team, but his contribution from a goals and assists is just incredible. I think he's hit 14 this season, and last night, if you look at the two goals that he took as well, he's a wand of a left foot. He's so easy on the eye when he has the ball at his feet, and he was very, very good again last night.
Would you give Arteta credit for developing him that way?
Yes, I would. Listen, there was always a natural talent within Odegaard. We saw, you know, he went to Real Madrid at the age of 15 or so.
All the promise in the world, yeah.
And he went probably into a dressing room which was, I guess, just surrounded by superstars, and there was no avenue for him to go and break into that team. He's had to kind of go out, and he went on loan to Arsenal. He also had a loan on a stint out on loan in Spain as well. But I think if you look at his progression, particularly over the last 24 months, you would have to say a lot of that is down to Arteta. And maybe it was just a perfect marriage between how Arteta wants to play the game, what role he wanted Odegaard to play, and then, you know, the talent that Martin Odegaard has. I think it naturally would have come to the fore, and I think he would have always been a good player. But I think his fit within this Arsenal team is just something that seems to work really, really well.
In fairness, listening to Odegaard and listening to Arteta afterwards and saying they still believe, I did believe them, but I mean, really though, do you think there's any chance now?
It's a very difficult question, because so much of that depends on Man City. As Man City stand, it's very hard to actually see them dropping any points.
They have to play Real Madrid twice though.
They do. So they play West Ham tonight, and then they play Leeds United, and then they go into that double header with Real Madrid with a game against Everton in between. So there's a lot of games that they have to juggle there. One sort of bad result in the Champions League could maybe just deviate them off course and maybe just cause a bit of havoc within the dressing room. But it's very hard to see that happening right now, just with how good they've been, both defensively, the best defensive record in the league, and then when you throw Haaland into the mix and how good he is going forward and the supply line he has behind them, I just find it hard to see where they're going to drop those points, because looking at the fixtures that they have in the running, they're not too bad. They're probably a little more favourable than Arsenal's, and I think Arsenal are probably likely to drop points, or more likely to drop points than Man City at this moment in time. But yeah, you have to hand it to Arsenal. Listen, they obviously had that wobble and the wheels came off for a week or two when they dropped points against Southampton, West Ham and Liverpool. But outside of that, I mean, Marie, they've been absolutely superb. They don't have the strength and depth that Man City have. You look at the starting 11, you can probably pick it most weeks, and outside of that, you've got Jorginho and Trossard. To be where they are with that squad is a remarkable achievement. And last night, when you look at the two sides, Chelsea finished 5 points ahead of Arsenal last year. Arsenal have doubled their points now this year. The progression that's been that has had in that squad and the development of those players, I think Mikel Arteta deserves massive amounts of credit.
So when Frank Lampard was picking his team last night, he's starting 11, what do you think made him decide to pick Aubameyang?
I have absolutely no idea. Absolutely no idea. Because one thing that Arsenal had last night in abundance was aggression, it was tempo, and it was a real will and desire and pride for the shirt. And
is he just the classic case of he's got nothing to play for, he gets paid every single week, he has talent clearly, like he's a really good footballer, but he just doesn't bother.
And he's leaving. Yeah. So why would you put him in there? I can't understand that. The last game he started was the reverse fixture about 6 months
November.
Ago. So I just can't understand why he'd throw him in there, because Chelsea, over the last couple of weeks, and the word that Frank Lampard used last night was they are passive and they're an easy team to play against. Okay, well, if you want to be difficult to play against, why would you put Aubameyang in? Like, he trotted around there for the first 45 minutes, and don't get me wrong, the supply wasn't great and they're probably not playing to Aubameyang's strengths by going into his feet, but he had 9 touches of the football and 4 of them were kickoffs. Like, what was he doing? It's not as if he was harrying people.
He was
people.
Doing nothing, Paul.
Yeah, he was doing nothing, and you could say that for the whole Chelsea team. Like, you can talk about tactics and you can talk about philosophy and style of play and how you want to set up, but if the basics aren't there of being, you know, this is in every sport, being difficult to play against, get your hands on people, be aggressive. Mm-hmm. If they're showing more and they've got more confidence within their team, well, try and settle them. And for me, Aubameyang and Raheem Sterling were just way off it last night. Way off it. Like, you can make allowances for some of the players who haven't played a huge amount of football, and maybe some of the younger ones that are in that squad, but they were miles off it.
Do you think this is it now for Frank Lampard's management career, or will he land on his feet somewhere else just given his background and his connections?
He's not going to manage a Premier League team. I just can't see that happening for the next while. Where would he end up potentially? I think people talk about him going into the FA, or he had a stint to the MLS. You know, maybe you could see him landing in one of those franchises and being a big name who will draw fans into games. But I think he's shown in decisions like that by playing Aubameyang in...
Like, surely he'd have advisors. Like, how that decision was come to last night is beyond me.
Yeah, and it's not the first time, Marie. It really isn't. I think there's been decisions in previous weeks. Even if you look at the game against Real Madrid, when they were somewhat in the tie come Stamford Bridge, He played without a recognised centre forward. I think he started with Conor Gallagher in behind, who hasn't contributed a huge amount of goals. And you sit there and you look at the 11 players and you go, why have you done that when you've got other players on the bench? Like, if I look, for instance, Mudrick's on the bench. Mudrick needs games. You know, this is somebody who's going to be at the football club for a number of years, given the contract that they've handed him out. Why would you not play Mudryk over Aubameyang and play Raheem Sterling central? Something simple like that, and build then for next season. I struggle to see where he ends up. You know, if you look at the results, the string of results that he's had at Everton, the string of results he's now had at Chelsea, they're without a win, they're without a point. I can't see who would want Frank Lampard, given kind of the record that he's had over the last 12 months.
The only place I can see him, or the only way I can see him getting a job again, is if there's an Amazon Prime documentary attached and we're actually going to follow him and see what his coaching style is actually like, or get some.
But what?
Sort of,
yeah, and that's it. Like, what is his style?
No idea. Like, yeah, let's pick up
on what were they trying to do last night? Yeah. I have no idea.
Let's move on to some good news. Seamus Coleman has given a positive update after his injury on Monday night. He was stretchered off against Leicester. It looked really bad, but thankfully he said that there's no ACL damage done. So he should be back, all going to plan, and hopefully have maybe an extended career now with Everton.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see how that one pans out, because Seamus is probably coming towards the latter end of his career, and a bad injury would have maybe hampered what he could potentially do over the next 12, 24 months. He's been an incredible ambassador to Everton, not only from a playing point of view, but he just seems like the ultimate professional who you can rely on. He's a leader. He's at the forefront of that club. He's highly regarded. And if you think about the investments, was it 60 grand they spent on him from Sligo, and the return they've gotten out of him? So he owes that club absolutely nothing. I guess from a selfish point of view, where we're looking at keeping players in Premier League clubs, if Everton are to be that next year, so it'd be good if he was there. And if you only rewind back to the game against France, like, he was very good for us, particularly in that 1v1 battle against Mbappe that night. He has an awful lot to offer for Ireland, and we're not blessed with a huge amount of strength and depth in the squad, so it's a huge boost that he hasn't come down with an ACL, because I've been there, Marie. They're not easy to come back from, and you don't know what sort of state you're going to come back in. And somebody described it to me before, it's like crashing a car. You can get it fixed, but it's never quite the same. So for him to avoid that is a big boost.
Is that how it feels? Yeah.
Well, my car is if my knee is a car, it's gone down to the scrapyard, because it certainly ain't good.
It's had a lot of services over the last year and hasn't been that effective. Messi is reportedly going to depart PSG this summer. There was a bit of controversy over the last few days. He was suspended because he headed off to Saudi Arabia on a trip, which I'm sure he pocketed a lot of money for. Some pictures were released. He was promoting the country and no doubt having some meetings about World Cup bids and potential moves there in time, maybe. But for now, it looks like he is going to be gone from PSG. Where he's going to go, we don't know yet, but it looks like it's the end of that. And I'm not sure it's been very successful, Paul, the whole experiment Messi-PSG.
No, it hasn't. And the reason I say that is why Messi was brought in, why Mbappe and Neymar was brought in, was to win the Champions League, and they haven't done that.
They got a lot of fans, though.
Yeah, they would have, and I'm sure from a commercial point of view, it's probably been quite lucrative. But
there's knock-off PSG jerseys all over Ireland.
What is the goal there? Like, they win the French League every single year. It's not the most competitive, and he never really wanted to go there. It was just the financial turmoil that Barcelona ended up in that kind of forced his hand, that he had to leave the club. I think he's been good, particularly in the first half of the season. I thought he linked up with Mbappe very well, but once the World Cup was won, how much more does he need to do? He probably feels like that was the last kind of strand that he wanted to tick off his bucket list of things to do. And I would say, if I was guessing, he'll end up back at Barcelona at the beginning of next year. I think if you look at that relationship with Saudi Arabia, ethically there's so much wrong with it, but I would say that financially he is gaining huge amounts of money from that relationship, and maybe he sees Barcelona as where he wants to finish his career. In Europe, at least, he might go back to Argentina in time,
go to the MLS.
Or the MLS into Miami has been touted before, but I get a feeling that he wants to go back to Barcelona, maybe because he's receiving so much money from the Saudis. He maybe feels that he can go at a discounted race on a lower wage and not...
And wind down.
Yeah, and Barcelona have picked up a bit in the last 12 mm-hmm. months. They're winning La Liga. They've got probably younger players in there who have really stood up, and it's maybe a little more lucrative for him to go back to Barcelona now than it was 24 months ago. So the relationship with PSG is dead. He's 100% leaving. It seems like his father has broken that news, who is mm-hmm. is his go-to guy. Yeah. And yeah, it'll be no more. And the project that he was brought in to win the Champions League has ultimately failed.
So Messi probably back to Barcelona, and Jude Bellingham maybe to Real Madrid.
It certainly looks that mm-hmm. way, and his father looks after him as well. And that's why we're probably not getting the same level of talk about this transfer coming into the media, because it's all been handled internally by his family.
Yeah.
And yeah, the news seems that they're very close to reaching an agreement. I think it makes sense. The only two clubs I could really see Bellingham going to is Man City or Real Madrid. And financially, Man City is maybe a little more lucrative. But I think when you have Real Madrid as an option, I think it's very, very difficult to turn down. Toni Kroos and Luka Modric are probably coming towards the tail end. It looked like Toni Kroos is actually going to retire, but he's extended by another 12 months. And naturally enough, I think he will fit into midfield three, which would be Tchouaméni, Camavinga and Jude Bellingham, all under the age of 22. And that's a team that you, or that's a midfield three that you can see replacing and going on to maybe yeah. doing the things that Casemiro, Modric and Toni Kroos have done. They've also got Vinicius and Rodrigo, prime age, mm-hmm. who'll be there for the next 5, 6, 7 years. So it makes sense. I think it's a brave move. I think it's a fantastic move, and I think it's one that Jude Bellingham will not be fazed by, and he'll be a household name at Real Madrid.
Yeah, and I'd say all the PSG fans will become Real Madrid fans then.
Yeah, all the young kids,
all the young ones, yeah,
all Bellingham jerseys.
Yep. Okay, Paul, thank you so much. Stay with us though, because there are a couple of games in the Premier League that we are going to be looking to a little bit later on. We have Liverpool and Fulham at 8 o'clock, and Man City and West Ham. We're going to take a very quick break, but do stay with us. We'll be talking to Loud's Sam Mulroy very shortly.
RTE 2FM.
Now, welcome back. I am delighted to be joined by Loud Sam Mulroy, as AIB have announced a 5-year extension to its sponsorship of the GAA All-Ireland Football Championship, the AIB GAA All-Ireland Club Championships and the AIB Camogie All-Ireland Club Championships. AIB is extremely proud to be extending their support of the toughest championships, as well as the players and communities involved in Gaelic games nationwide. How are you, Sam?
I'm good. How are you?
We were talking football there, and when I was doing my research on you earlier, I saw that you were referred to as the Loud Messi by your manager, Mickey Hart.
I was, yeah. First and last time, I'll be referred to Leo Messi, I think.
That's not a bad old comparison now, to be fair.
No, not a bad one, and I'll thank him for that later on. So, yeah, mad one, all right.
I'm waiting now to see the kids' jerseys in time, the kids' Loud jerseys with Messi on the back, and everyone will know that it's you.
I don't know.
So look, the weekend, a great win over Offaly. I watched most of the games this weekend, and it was, I'd say, the game of the weekend anyway. Just brilliant entertainment. What was it like to play in it?
Yeah, it was, as you said, it was an entertaining fixture, definitely, and look, one that we probably... and feel that we probably should have had dead and buried a few times, but look, in fairness, Offaly, they kept coming back, and they never lay down, and look, thankfully we got over the line after extra time. So look, a brilliant result for us, and hopefully we can replicate something like that now in 2 weeks time.
You really roared into the game yourself in the latter stages. I know you've been injured for a while, but you know, when you're in the early stages of a game and things aren't going well, do you doubt yourself, or are you always confident you're going to have your moment?
Yeah, look, it's a funny one, I suppose. I wasn't playing to the usual standard that I definitely know I can, and I had a few missed opportunities and stuff. But look, no, look, I just suppose I kept chipping away as best I could and kept controlling things that I could, like communication and hard work. Mm-hmm. And look, I felt I was still setting up scores and making things happen in that front as well. So look, I know I probably wasn't having my best game. I'm not silly enough to not know that. So, and I've been told a lot over the last few days. But look, I suppose it's kind of that elite. I suppose, look, I've learned over the last few years, you just have to forget about it as quickly as possible and move on. And hopefully things do go right. And thankfully they did turn for me a little bit in extra time.
That's probably a sign, though, of the standards that you've set for yourself, though, when you know, the suggestion was that you weren't playing to how you usually do, but then you come out and you managed to score 4 points in that extra time. So you've probably only got yourself to blame, is what I'm saying, when you always have a good game.
Yeah, look, I don't know if that's the case, but look, yeah, definitely, I suppose. I think people are looking for you to be scoring the whole time, and look, maybe that's just not the case sometimes. And as I said, I felt I was contributing maybe in other ways, and look, people maybe just, I don't know if they don't pick that up or if they're not interested and they're expecting me to do other things. But look, I think, look, in fairness, the boys are doing an excellent job on the scoring front, and I was chipping away as best I could at the rest of it, I suppose, as I said. So look, as you said, then it came good for me in extra time. But look, I suppose maybe in previous years when the game's not going well for me, I probably would have maybe shied away or looking to be taken off, showing us the way or whatever. It's just not your day. But look, I suppose, as I said, I learned over the last number of years that look, you have to stand up, and that's what I just tried to do as best I could in extra time.
So has your game changed then over the last few years since Mickey Hart's came in?
A little bit, I suppose. Look, he's obviously him and Gavin Devlin have both massively helped me improve my game an awful lot, and like all the rest of the lads as well. So look, they've definitely brought our game to another level, and yeah, it's just been incredible, I suppose, the journey that they've brought us on. And yeah, definitely, look, I don't know whether it's changed or improved or what you want to call it, but they've definitely helped in some sort of way anyway.
Sometimes when you're playing for a county like Louth, or a county that's perceived as one that isn't always going to have success at the start of a season, does it ever play in your mind about the impact that you can have in your career as a whole? Because it's geography, you're from where you're from, and that's it.
Yeah, look, I think that's, as you said, it's, you're from where you're from, and you have to get on with it, and you either complain about being from Louth or you can go do something about it. And I suppose that's always been kind of my mentality, is look, we could stay here and give out about it, or we can go change it and try to do something successful from what we've got. So look, I think we've done that over the last number of years, and it's just about keeping going on that trajectory, hopefully, and hopefully pick up another few wins over the course of the next few weeks.
It's remarkable, really, though, when you think about it, to be able to put those back-to-back league promotions together, to be winning back-to-back games in the Championship, just to be able to turn things around for look, Mickey and Gareth to come in and to be able to do that. What would you say that they changed to make you believe that you were a team that could compete towards the top of the leaderboard?
Yeah, I suppose, look, I suppose with their kind of what they've done over their course of their career, and when you look at what Mickey Hart's done, he's 3 All-Ireland titles and a stellar career, inter-county management career. And so like, it's kind of just a case of, if we don't believe in them, who are we going to believe in? And I suppose they just change a little bit of culture and the standards that we set for ourselves, and what we've come to expect of each other. So I suppose they've just raised everything that we do in Louth, and I suppose they've got massive buy-in from the players. As I said, they have that respect from all of us, so it's just been a case of buying in and having a little bit of self-belief, and I suppose why not us. And Mickey Hart and Gavin have just instilled that kind of mentality within us now in the last few years, and yeah, it's been an enjoyable process.
So yourself then, you run a fitness company, am I right?
Yes I do, I run a gym.
So tell us about that and how you're able to juggle that with being an inter-county footballer.
Yeah, it can be tough at times, but look, they go hand in hand, I suppose, in some ways. And in terms of, I'm in the gym most of the day, and most inter-county footballers now need to be in the gym most of the day. So it's gone well with that side of things. But look, yeah, there's a lot of early mornings, and lots of time management has to be done. But yeah, look, I suppose I started the business over three years ago now, and yeah, it's taken off really, really well. And we've a great group of people who come to us a couple of times a week, and yeah, it's excellent. We've over 100 or so members, and yeah, it's excellent. Really, really enjoying it, I suppose, is the main thing.
So when you were injured a few weeks ago, were you there the whole time?
Yeah, well, I was, unfortunately. I was sick of the place.
You came back really quickly though, so it was a hamstring tear, and then you were expected to be out for about 12 weeks, but you made it back after 7. How did you do that?
Yeah, I suppose it was a 10 to 12 week injury, and I suppose when I first got that phone call that was going to be that time, I suppose shocked, because I'd never pulled my hamstring before, and I hadn't know what it was supposed to feel like or how bad it was going to be, or so I suppose the 10 to 12 weeks was definitely a shock to me. And I suppose, look, it was a case of putting my head down and getting to work straight away. I always knew in the back of my mind that it was never going to be 12 weeks. It's just the way I'm wired, and I was going to do everything I could to try to get back as quickly as possible. And I suppose just have an excellent physio team and doctors around us and in the lead setup that allowed me to push as hard as I could to get back as soon as possible. And thankfully, I obviously played the Westmead match 2 weeks ago, and it's held up since then nicely, so hopefully it does going forward.
Because you've got a lot of games coming up now. Leinster final to look forward to against Dublin, given the fact that things were quite tight with themselves and Kildare. What would your frame of mind be heading into a game? And I guess, look, Dublin from a few years ago isn't the same Dublin that we're facing now.
Yeah, in a way, I suppose. Look, we have the absolute utmost respect for Dublin, and what they've done over the last number of years, they've absolutely dominated Leinster, and we can't look past that. Like, there's players there with 8 or 9 All-Ireland medals, and some incredible players. So look, it's going to be a massive task for us to win the match, but look, one that we have to look and go after and try to believe in ourselves that we can. So yeah, it's going to be a test, but one we're definitely looking forward to.
And after that, then have that round robin series to look forward to as well.
Yeah, which is brilliant. And I suppose, look, personally, really looking forward to the new structure and the way they've you've so many championship matches, and I think that's what all the players want. We're training since last November time, so yeah, it's pretty really really exciting that we still have 3 or 4 championship matches ahead of us.
Yeah, overall, Sam, when you break it down, it feels like the ratio of matches to training has really improved.
Yeah, definitely. Look, I think it has, and I think maybe COVID has a little bit of an impact on that. Like, when we come back after COVID, you had a straight knockout championship, I think, twice, and it really just highlighted the fact that you were training so much for very little return, I suppose. So I think definitely the GAA have made a good step forward towards changing the structure in a positive light, in terms of the ratio of training to matches. Yeah.
Right, well, you have that to look forward to. We have lots to look forward to as well. Thank you so much, Sam, and best of luck over the next few weeks with Dublin and the round robin, and hopefully you'll stay injury free after that tough few weeks.
I hope so.
Big summer ahead. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much. Cheers.
Bye. RTE 2FM. Game on 2FM. Hi, welcome back. It's time to turn our attention to Camogie. I'm delighted to say that Aoife Murray joins us on the line. Aoife, how are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm all right. I didn't know if you'd be good after Cork lost to Waterford in the Munster Camogie Championship, but you're all right.
I am. I survive. I survived. But look, in fairness, it was maybe a result that a lot of people maybe were surprised by. Mm-hmm. But even thinking back just to the discussion last week, where we were looking at Cork coming as runners up, Waterford winning the second tier league, mm-hmm. and even how I suppose Waterford were developing last summer, and how hard they pushed them and frustrated Cork as well, I think, in last year's championship. I suppose they had the signs of it, and maybe playing in that second tier league, we probably maybe didn't get enough, or we didn't get enough chances to see them. But certainly they were very much value for their win.
Yeah, I think we had suggested that if once these games started and once championship started, we'd have a better understanding of what different teams had gained from their respective runs in the league. But you could see from even Beth Carton's fist pump that they really wanted this win.
Yeah, and I think in fairness, like I've looked back at it, and I've read all the articles with regard to it being the first time, I suppose, really since they've come up to this level where they've beaten Cork. But I would look back the last couple of years to say they were knocking on the door a little bit anyway. And I think that huge structure that was put in place last year to how they developed a Waterford style to play. So, you know, towards the latter end of the championship, they weren't going out to stop teams from playing. They were going out to play a Waterford style of game. And I think looking at some of the league games and looking at last weekend, they've just developed that further. And I think there seems to be a confidence. And I think winning on Sunday really was, I suppose, the fist pump to the belief and the structure and the process. And they seem to have got a few more players in particularly getting more people than Beth Carton on the scoreboard or Rocket or Bray even, and having those few extra players. Even defensively, they seem to have a very solid structure. Like, bringing back Vicky Faulkner there has really kind of given an extra solid maybe leadership back there, maybe that they possibly didn't have, Marie, last year. So that's a further building block. I think that they have developed. So, I think, again, I know I'm repeating myself, I think they were very much value for that win.
It's so hard to believe that it's the first time they'd beaten them in Munster Championship, but there you go, it's done now. A few players, though, were tied with the dual commitments. Is this just going to be ongoing now forevermore, Aoife?
I know, and it's such a pity, isn't it, Marie, that we have to use such time that should be promoting the games and promoting the players and the sport to constant issues, isn't it? Like, it's such a, I don't mean to speak flippantly of it, but it's such a waste of such valuable promotion for the positive parts of the game. I know this, it happens on the men's side as well, but it's just such a constant. And it's disappointing that, you know, I suppose this is what, when we had this conversation recently with regard to integration and how and what that might look like, and what good might look like. And I think for integration and years to come, good should be that we're not talking about dual clashes, that there's an actual communication from the very get-go of this is going to be a master fixture list. Added complexity here, Marie, is that the Munster Camogie competition, it's not a national competition, right? So there's that extra little bit of complexity put in place as well. It's just such a disappointment because you are really, I suppose, you're targeting the players that we should be proud of nearly the most and promoting the most, these amazing athletes.
Super talented ones, yeah, committed.
Yeah, absolutely. And these are the players that we should be promoting to younger players, girls and boys. But unfortunately, they're always caught in the crossfire.
Yeah. And as you said, then we end up taking away from the actual promotion of the game. And you know, you even look at Clare and the goal that Áine O'Loughlin scored in the Gaelic grounds against Limerick, and absolutely amazing. And they're the things that you want to be talking about. But unfortunately, it gets lost a little bit. But still, I think having Clare and Waterford in that final is going to be a nice novel one.
Well, it's actually, I think, Waterford versus Tip.
They're playing this weekend,
This weekend. But I think what you'll find then is, at least Clare, I think, was at the semi-final of the Munster last year, where they brought Cork to extra time down in Páinc Ring. And they just ran out of steam. And I think seeing them now maybe get to that final spot is just another step. And hopefully, I was really positive on Clare last year in the championship, albeit they had to fight tooth and nail at the very end. But there was something nice about the style of play, and I think the basic skills, especially that hurley pass, I thought that they'd really worked on that. And again, they have a few more extra players as well that they're now starting to get into the mix. Waterford, it would be such a good step for Waterford if they can get over Tipperary this weekend and have a Clare versus Waterford Munster final. I think it would show maybe where all that work at grassroots is going to get maybe these other counties, and I don't mean that in a disrespectful way, I mean getting a Waterford and a Clare into a Munster final. I think that's where we really have to work hard at our game, because that just adds in another tier, another level of success into the championship, which should only make it more competitive.
Yeah, because you want that gap closed. You don't want to have that same conversation every year where you have a top three, or you know, you want someone to try and get up there. And look, it'd be great to see one of those two edge up, or Dublin. I didn't realise that Mags Darcy is on the Dublin coaching ticket.
Yeah, no, I knew she'd been called up to the backroom team, and it's great to see her get back into I suppose the Camogie side of things, especially into county level. Huge experience now as well with regard to coaching, being involved in inter-county backroom teams, and I think me bringing that experience in, particularly in the female form, because I know we're quite heavily reliant on the men to come in and help us with regard to coaching and management, etc., at intercounty level. So seeing the likes of Mags Darcy getting back in there, and Noel Kennedy on the Offaly side of things, seeing these, I suppose, women that have played the game at such high level and hugely respected within the game of Camogie, seeing them get back in, hopefully it's a sign of maybe more to come from that.
Yeah, because we do need them for sure. Thoughts on Dublin? Do you think that they can maybe get together? It took them a while to get going in the league. There was a lot of upheaval in their own management. But are we going to have a season where Dublin come to the fore, do you think?
I don't know. And I think my answer reflects maybe the up and down year that they've had so far. And I think even looking at that game at the weekend, they were very lucky. They were very lucky to come out of that game with a win. And I suppose people will say, if you create your own luck. And they certainly created it right at the end of that game. I think Wexford will be extremely disappointed that they didn't manage to close out that game. I think they had a very positive league, so I think disappointing on the Wexford side that they should have just closed the door. Maybe a good learning for them. Dublin. I don't have a straight answer for you, to be honest, because I think it's just, it is reflective of the patchiness maybe of their start, and for the players, a lot that they had no control over, you know, themselves. So hopefully it may be like getting the likes of Mags in there, that it might just create that little bit of stabilisation that they need. They now get another big game in Leinster, which should again only hopefully provide them a little bit more building blocks, maybe a little bit more stability and a little bit more confidence in their own style of play. Hopefully it'll push them in the right direction.
Okay, Aoife Murray, as always, thank you so much for joining us. Nadine Doherty is here as well. Nadine, we had lots of football games last weekend, and before we get through them, just overall in general, considering we've spent so many of the last few weeks seeing pictures coming from Australia of our ladies footballers joining the women's league over there, what was the standard like? What's this year been without some of the biggest players in the game?
I think overall, being very, very honest, Marie, it has dropped.
Okay. I was worried if this would happen now.
Yeah, I mean, it has to happen when your top, top players aren't playing in your championship or your league. Of course it's going to drop. I mean, Vicky Wall, we always talk about her. She's a star attraction. If she's not playing in the Meath team, you know, they're not going to be at their best. Now, she's back in, of course, but she's missed the league. And you just wonder, and we spoke about this in the past, how long it takes players to, I mean, they're physically in amazing shape, but how long does it take to get them back into the rhythm of football? Like, I suppose it's negative in a way that the standard has dropped, but then you have to look at it in a little bit of a positive. The championship is probably more competitive than it's ever been.
Yeah.
We now have a meeting of teams in the middle, I would say, as opposed to teams that have been on in the middle tier, perhaps going to the upper tier. I think the upper has dropped a little bit, the middle possibly has come up a little bit, and they've all met in the middle, because realistically now, there's, while Kerry are very much outliers at the minute, there's still three or four teams there who would feel that they have a huge chance of an All-Ireland. But yeah, just overall, Marie, I've just missed the big guns. Like, that's,
do you know what I've missed? The high scoring games, because there was no scores at the weekend.
Oh, we skip on some.
Because I was working on Sunday, and you know, the halftime scores came in, and I was thinking, okay, all the scores are going to come in the second half. And then you're looking at Cavan only scoring 4 points in the whole game. Donegal 1-6, Meath 7 points, Dublin 1-6. Okay, Tip and Cork was a bit better, 1-14, 1-17. Waterford only getting 8 points. Kerry did get 2-8, but you'd expect that given the forwards that they have. But are they all just playing defensive football? Like, what is it?
Well, certainly in Ulster. Okay. I mean, it went back to the dark ages there now at the weekend. And I suppose needs must, perhaps. We've spoken about Donegal, that transition, possibly without their bigger players. But it was very, very defensive. And as myself and Shane spoke about last week, you know, they played that possession football, relying on their big stars up front. And Cairn got three delivered. Cavan will be really disappointed, though, Marie. I think this was a big chance for Cavan to make a statement. Like, just listening to Sam there earlier, you know, talking about changing a culture and structures, I think Cavan are a county who have the potential to do that. I mean, they're cleaning up underage. Like, at under 16 level in Ulster, Cavan are the team everybody fears. They've been in post-primary school finals. Like, they won the A post-primary, and that's massive in ladies football. You know, like, if you're a minor player, you're ready to go up. So I think it was a big opportunity missed for them. Look, Donegal will be delighted, and I'm delighted for them, because it possibly puts them in an Ulster final. That's presuming Armagh beat Cavan, which is highly likely. And I think Donegal will be happy with that, because in terms of the groupings then for the All-Ireland series, Donegal would be the second seed in a group. So that would, first or second seed, depending on how they would get on. So, I mean, that was pretty massive for them. And look, spoke about senior players being very important, and all the senior players on both teams delivered there, but it was a tough watch at times, as was Dublin and Meath, to be honest, Marie. I would have expected a lot more. It was cagey enough. Dublin, I think the difference was Dublin applied themselves more for longer periods of the game, whereas when Meath had their purple patch, which was for, to be honest, 30-40 minutes of the game, they're not creating enough chances like they used to, and they're just not taking them. I feel, you know, players, and I hate, you know, calling out individual players, but they're players who have set such high standards themselves, like Neva Sullivan and Stacey Grimes. I just feel they're just different players to what they have been for the last 2 years, and it's just hard for them. Now, I still think they have another level to go up, because Vicky and Emma and those kind of girls will have those few weeks, but it's a tough watch. And then looking at Dublin, like, I don't think Hannah Turrell really meant that goal, to be honest. And it was a big mistake and uncharacteristic from Monica. So look, maybe both teams as well, they were keeping the foot off the pedal, because it's really likely that they'll meet again in the Leinster final in a couple of weeks. But yeah, it was nothing really to write home about now.
Unlike Tip and Cork, which was an entertaining one.
Entertaining, Anne-Marie, we talk about her all the time, like Ashley Maloney.
And I saw a picture of her today. The club released her in her new AFLW jersey.
Like, there you go. I mean, unbelievable. Like, 112, 1-6 from play. I'm not sure what Cork were thinking, though, in terms of, I mean, we all know what Ashley Maloney's about. And I think, like, Tip will be very disappointed to have walked away with nothing from that game. I think they very much come in under the radar. And while they, obviously, they rely heavily on Maloney, but when you're that kind of player, like, of course you're going to rely on her, because she's always going to deliver. Like,
was it the ACL she did?
She did the ACL, yeah.
There you go, Paul. She's back and she's after kicking 112, 1-6 from play. Sometimes you come back and you're just as good as you were before.
Unfortunately, not all of us.
Let's hope she stays fit over in Australia. But I think with Cork, Marie, they're just puzzling now. I know their team selection was obviously affected by the dual players, and Aoife covered that earlier. But I don't know what they're thinking, to be honest. I think they kind of need to start getting their first 15 in order. I'm at a loss as to why Eric O'Shea is still in midfield. I just don't think they're getting enough out of her in there. The O'Sullivans obviously are so influential, but I just think they have a lot more, like, in their repertoire, and I think they just have to start using it now, because you are looking at Kerry, you're looking at Dublin, you're looking at Meath. There is a first 15, first 17 starting to develop, and I think with Cork they seem to be way off that, and I think that might affect them when it comes to the group games.
Okay, well, Waterford lost Kerry 2-8 to 8 points. We don't have time to talk about that, but we do talk about Kerry quite a lot, so I don't mind
absolutely
so much today. Right, we're going to take a very quick break. We're hopefully going to have some team news from that Manchester City-West Ham game, and maybe some from Liverpool-Fulham as well. Stay with us. Peter Smith is going to join us from Manchester.
RTE 2FM. Game on 2FM.
Welcome back to Premier League games kicking off at 8 o'clock. Liverpool, Fulham, Man City and West Ham. I'm delighted to say we're joined by Peter Smith all the way from Manchester. How are you, Peter?
Hi, good evening to you. This encounter representing a chance for City to regain pole position. It's also one of six opportunities for striker Erling Haaland to set and establish a goal record, having drawn level with the previous Premier League best of 34, shared previously, of course, by Andy Cole and Alan Shearer. In all competitions, Haaland is on 50, 12 short of the great Dixie Dean's overall tally of 63 for Everton way back in 1927-28. City face a West Ham team who haven't beaten them in the last 14 meetings. We're still awaiting official confirmation of the two teams, but Kevin De Bruyne is set to miss out once again through injury. I don't really think there's going to be too many other Pep Guardiola alterations. And David Moyes has hinted at naming an unchanged West Ham team as well.
And Peter, just given the Arsenal winning again last night and the title race coming to an end, what's the confidence levels like around Manchester?
I think there's a real feeling that City will romp the title. They've obviously got two home games coming up back-to-back. Leeds United and Sam Allardyce will be here on Saturday. But the way that they played last week against Arsenal was absolutely incredible. Some of the football and some of the goals, absolutely superb. And there's a belief that City haven't peaked as yet. West Ham United haven't done very well here in the last 11 trips to the Etihad Stadium. So I think everybody's expecting a home banker, but you never, ever know. But I think that City will regain pole position at the end of 90 minutes tonight.
Sam Allardyce said he's just as good a manager as Pep Guardiola, so I hope somebody asks him about that in the post-match press conference, Peter.
Well, I think we know what we're going to expect on Saturday against Leeds United. Sam's team will be organised. They'll be very, very defensive indeed. But it's all very well sitting back and hoping that you can repel Manchester City for a length of time. Teams have done it for 45 minutes, have done it for 60, 70 minutes, but there's so much quality in the City team. They always seem to find a way through, as I'm sure they'll find a way through the West Ham defence tonight.
OK, Peter Smith, thank you so much as always. Paul Corrie, any team news from Liverpool, Fulham?
No, none yet. I'm frantically refreshing my Twitter feed here trying to see if I can get team news for either of the games, but none yet just yet. But I mean, you could probably guess the Man City team with Kevin De Bruyne being out. They pulled Alvarez in the other day and it worked really well, so I would suspect they'll go with something similar. I think this will be a situation whereby you'll see Man City come really quickly out of the traps, Marie, and try to put the game to bed. They've 8 games this month, so they'll be conscious of how much they have to put in their legs. So I'm going for a comfortable Man City win tonight.
Okay, Paul, Nadine, thank you so much for coming in as always. I'll be back tomorrow. Plenty to look forward to. Do join us for now, though. Beto da Silva is up next.